My name's Liana Berry, and you're listening to Art Muse Podcast, a podcast about the intersections between art, healing, and creativity. Hello, and welcome back to Art Muse Podcast. It's not unusual for creatives to have huge hearts, inner fire, and to be besotted with nature. We are in good company in this episode as I chat with environmental activist, ocean lover, and artist Jolie Russell. Jolie has found hope and empowerment through weaving plastic waste into functional art, and I'm so looking forward to sharing my chat with her as we discuss the intersections between activism and art making, how to find a pathway through some of the difficult aspects of facing environmental challenges and plastic pollution, and also how to find joy in your creativity. And Jolie is also kind enough to share some of her experiences living in a unique part of the world. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi, Jolie. Welcome to Art Muse Podcast. I'm so excited to have you on today.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Let's start with where you're joining us from because, yeah, you're in a really interesting part of the world at the moment and have been living there for a little while.
Yeah. So I live on the Cocos Keeling Islands, which is an Australian island, but it's a lot closer to Indonesia. That's part of WA.
So would you fly out of Broome or Perth to get there?
Yeah, fly in and out of Perth. We go through Christmas Island or up north to Learmonth near Exmouth. Probably it's about half a day travel to get up here.
Nice. And what took you to the Cocos Islands? I'm so fascinated. I think you probably get asked this a lot. I think anyone who lives on an island remotely probably gets lots of questions because it's so fascinating for most people, I guess, how you get into that lifestyle, how you end up in those places. And it's going to tie in probably a lot in our conversation today because it's a big part of your arts practice and also your, I don't know, how would you term your other work? Like I always get stuck on the language around environmental advocacy or volunteering. I don't know. This is really an easy way to describe.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a word for it either. Activism, sort of. I guess that would be the closest term. Yeah, but I first came to the islands in 2019. I got a job as an au pair looking after people's kids. So I came up here. I was 19 at the time. And yeah, that was 5 years ago. And I have left a little bit, but pretty well. This has been my home since. And I just got hooked on the remoteness and how far away it is from a lot of the craziness of the world. It definitely catches up with us here, which is, yeah, what my work involves. I mean, you see it on our beaches, but yeah, I love how far away and how remote it is.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. I mean, I will do a little intro for you, but I should let you describe your creative work yourself. But it's interesting to think of that the islands are so far removed from some of that like consumerist, fast paced, like tapped in life of like, you know, that you see in the city, but yet you're dealing with a lot of the consequences of that life. It kind of reaches you, but in a really different way, in that you're not in the city kind of in that hum and that buzz and that excess, but the excess is making its way and impacting the environment you live in.
Yeah, that's right. And not even just where I live. So my background is actually working, volunteering for Sea Shepherd. I did that for a number of years as the marine debris coordinator. Marine debris is like rubbish in our ocean for the Great Southern of Western Australia and Cocos, the Cocos Islands. And I travelled with them to some of the most remote places, like thousands of kilometres away from people in some places, just like the most amazing coastline you've ever seen, like in up northeast of Arnhem Land and nobody for miles around. And then, yeah, like knee deep in rubbish on the beaches that are out of sight, out of mind. No one even knows it's there, really.
Yeah, so confronting, like looking at some of your videos or photos that you have on your social media is just mind-blowing, just like the layers. And I think, okay, before I get carried away, I'll take three steps back. And would love to hear, I guess, your description of what you do creatively. And I have an environmental heart, so I get really excited by it. I guess the fascination for me is the interplay between those parts of your life and your creative practice. But
we haven't even mentioned your creative practice yet. So let's step back a little bit. I'd love to hear, like, if you want to share how you view yourself as a creative and what led you to your current creative practice.
Yeah. So originally, creatively, like as a kid, that was like my thing. I loved making things and I loved drawing things. And I, as a small child, was totally obsessed with knitting. Like, I would just have the patience to sit and knit for like hours and hours and hours. And I just loved it. And yeah, I've also just always loved like our planet, and I love just everything that involves nature. And I just, yeah, so my art practice now, I guess, involves that. So one second, there's a plane landing.
That's all right. Take as many minutes as you need.
Yeah, there's a, like, the runway for the airstrip is like right next to my ear. So the plane just landed. So my art practice now is that I make things out of what I find on the beach. So I make baskets mostly. I go on these big rope mission collections and I collect rope of all different colors. Like, the amount I get would blow people's minds. And then I weave them into baskets and earrings and things like that. And yeah, and I teach other people how to do it in classes. But I guess that stemmed from, like I said, I used to work for Sea Shepherd, and I'd go on these huge campaigns where we were collecting about a ton per kilometer of rubbish off the beach, which is pretty mind-blowing because plastic is really, really lightweight. And a lot of what we were finding is plastic, as well as, yeah, fishing gear and food packaging. And part of me was like, yeah, I'm doing something worthy and I'm making a difference and I'm helping our planet. We're putting so much effort into collecting it all off of the beach. It's like serious hard labor to, like, from sunrise until sunset, just picking it up and carting it to the trucks. But after a few years, I just could not ignore the fact that, like, what are we doing with it after we take it all off the beach? And yeah, we were just taking it to landfill. Like, that's all it was. Like, it had no use. Everything was just rubbish. It was just brittle and couldn't be recycled because it had been in the sun that much. So it's going to the landfill or it was getting burnt. And I just was like straight back into my environmental doom. Like, I just couldn't see. I didn't know what was worse, just leaving it where it was on the beach where it's a huge impact on the environment, or taking it to landfill or burning it. I was just like, we're just moving it from one place to another and it's not a solution.
You're like, you think of it holistically and you're still putting it inside, like, you're still putting it somewhere in the
earth. Exactly.
You're just moving it
from one place to another. Yeah. I think of that as like every part of our planet is sacred, amazing land or sea. And just because we've put up a fence and a sign that says like, this is the tip, like, it doesn't make it actually okay to just put all of our toxic waste there. Like, we've just decided that that's okay, but really, like, that land should have the chance to thrive as well.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
So on Cocos, for example, like, our islands are amazing. I want to say that first, that they are, our marine life is mind-blowing. We have mantas, like manta rays, and we have dolphins, and we have turtles, and we have amazing coral, and we have, yeah, all sorts of abundant life. And some of our beaches are totally pristine. And in the same moment, some of our beaches are totally trashed. Like, I don't know if you've seen any of the photos, but yeah, you can like be deep in plastic in some places and tons and tons and tons of fishing rope just sitting there. And COVID happened, and a friend of mine and I just started making baskets and it just snowballed into something huge.
Yeah, so for people that I guess don't really have much ocean and coastal knowledge, it's the reason why some places you won't see any of it and some places you'll be wading knee deep in it is to do with currents and tides.
Currents, yeah.
And so certain beaches will be like, I guess, almost like a magnet that will attract. The currents will bring in much more than other places, which is really unfortunate that sometimes that happens in places that aren't visible. Like you said, some of the worst impacted beaches are those that are the most remote. So people aren't really seeing it.
Yeah, that's right. Like in Western Australia, for example, our beaches there are pristine and people are really proud of their beaches and they love their beaches. And I've been in a lot of conversations where I've been holding a beach clean or I've been doing a talk and I get somebody that says, like, putting the blame on another poorer, usually, country and saying, like, it's their fault. But really, it's totally not like that at all. So we're in such a wealthy and abundant country and, like, we've been shipping our rubbish to other poorer countries across the world for years, and we're just so disconnected that we don't even know. And it's totally current, it's totally chance that it's not our beaches that are trashed.
I guess we're talking percentage, it's not the visible beaches, but like you said, if you access to remote parts of Australia, there is plenty of visibility. And I think, you know, even where I am, like I will go on walks and pick up rubbish. A lot of it is like surface level, like, you know, recent rubbish, like a drink container mm-hmm. or tampons or whatever it is that washes up, you know, like there's sort of things that people
cigarette
are just,
butts.
Yeah, you know, using or trashing around because it can't be bothered taking it with them or it's gross to take with them or whatever. And you get lots of microplastic, mm-hmm. lots of like little broken down pieces that have worn away that aren't, if you're not paying close attention, you won't realize that they're there. And I'm sure the beaches that you've cleaned up have like a mixture of both. So I will tag your socials and things in this interview. And I would encourage people to go and look at. I saw your story yesterday, but it would be cool if you could share a post if you do have pictures to coincide with the podcast interview coming out, because I think humans are so visual, and just to see that visual impact and just the sort of intensity of like some of the stuff that washes up, like you say,
scale.
Yeah. And big, thick ropes made of plastic, really confronting and really eye-opening. And yeah, it's interesting talking about your emotional experience of that and that journey between, like, initially I'm sure you found it really empowering, like you said, I'm doing something, I'm helping, but like how that wears down after a while. And I think you said to me when we were chatting pre-interview that one of the good metaphors for talking about like environmental change or like change in some of the things that we're doing is like around that turning the tap off to stop the bath from overflowing.
Yeah, so the quote that I think about a lot is that you wouldn't start mopping up the floor if your bath was overflowing before you turn off the tap. And it's the exact same thing with, all of our consumption and the waste that we're creating, the plastic waste. Like, we can't pick it up quick enough, and it's not solving the problem either. I'm not where I want to be yet in terms of sustainability wise, like growing my own food and being self-sufficient in that way yet. But yeah, like the core problem is a lot bigger. But yeah, like if we're cleaning it up is great because it causes such huge harm in our marine environments. Like a lot of the beaches that I collect from are turtle nesting beaches, like on Christmas Island, they're digging through plastic, like big, huge ropes getting stuck, and like their nests are like honestly half plastic. I'm not even exaggerating.
And I think so many things I want to say. I'm which order am I going to talk to you about them? Because I think there's a real parallel, like, between being environmentally, like, I know, like I said, I don't really know the language, but like changing our lifestyle to have better environmental impact has a real parallel, I think, with creativity, because like you said, the kind of barriers that I bump into, I'm sure you bump into more, have more conversations around it, are people that feel really hopeless and people that feel like they're not doing enough and they're not perfect at it. And that kind of happens a lot in creativity as well. People are like, I'm not good enough at art.
Yeah.
I haven't mastered all the skills. Yeah. And it's not like, I think like the message for getting people involved in both of those spaces is around like, just doing a little bit, even a little bit is better than nothing. And soon as you start doing a little bit, it builds on each other. Like it's the start of a journey that you will constantly be on and you'll be constantly adding to. And so it's a really interesting parallel, I think, because I think it's the same thing with if you're trying to live a more environmentally friendly life. It's not about being perfect. It's just about like starting and having things that you feel like you can do. And then as you move forward, you add to that. And it's the same with being creative, I guess. You start somewhere and then you
progress. And people have the ability, like we as humans have the ability to be caretakers of the land and improve an environment. And a lot of the time we do the total opposite. We just take. And I want to see a world where that starts to change and we start to appreciate what we have and collaborate with it. So I guess what I've been doing is like collaborating with this problem. Like it's overtaken such a huge chunk of my life. And I was at a total environmental gloom stage where like it was like the thing that I love most. And I'm just seeing it struggle so much. Like I've seen things that would blow people's minds. Like I've seen the first baby turtle that I've ever seen, I found dead, trapped in a net. And I've seen, like ghost nets. I mean, that's what they are. They're called ghost nets because they're full of marine bodies, because nets are designed to catch things. And whether they're on a fish boat or they've broken free and they're floating in the ocean, they're going to keep doing their job. And they keep catching things and they catch each other and they grow and grow and grow in this huge floating. So my art now is so small scale, but it's turning something that kept me up at night in such a horrible way to something that keeps me up at night making it. And just such a small switch, but for me it's been huge.
And I think what you're doing is really powerful, because I think it's targeting that duality that we're talking about, like the need to turn off the tap but also the need to clean up the water. Because I think obviously you're making baskets, weaving earrings and different things from the marine debris, using the materials that you're finding on the beach that are like rubbish and transforming them into something else. But it's, you're also like educating in a way, like people become interested because they're like, well, where has this come from and how is this a problem? And there's a real positivity around people engaging with your maker's narrative around the material and who you are and what you do. And then obviously it sounds like you're very, you know, you're incredibly passionate. So you also actively have the energy to educate. And hopefully over time, you know, the world is enormous and it's so overwhelming. And I certainly go through the same phases of feeling like overwhelmed just by the enormity and the scale of the world. I think most sensitive or creative people do, but it's made up of individuals. So it's like, we just need individual action collectively. And, you know, things can change quite dramatically. So I think, it's really exciting that like your arts practice has been able to sort of target.
It's flipped for me from, like, I'm still doing the thing that I was doing years and years and years ago, which is picking things up off them. But instead of me like I've sat on countless beaches and just bawled my eyes out. Instead of me doing that, it's the same thing in a physical way, but my mindset on it has totally switched. It's turned into like treasure hunting, and I'm like, oh wow, like look at this color and look at this texture and look at this, like I'm excited. And it's not sustainable for me to like spend my whole life lying on a beach and feeling terrible. Like you just can't keep going like that. And even like I've been doing talks at schools and things like that about my work, and I've always been trying to get people to come along. People don't want to hear the doom and gloom. I think, what I was saying was that, it's transformed it from gloom to joy. And, I love it. Like even yesterday I got in the little boats with my friends and we went over to one of my favourite islands, which is South Island. And we went on this big mission and went rope collecting for like 3 or 4 hours. And we were finding like really cool things. Like we found like a slipper cray and we found a sea urchin that was getting eaten by hermit crabs. And we collected like probably 4 buckets full of rope. And I'm going to be using that rope to do an art rope workshop that's coming up in a few weeks. And it just provides a space that is a positive one and an enjoyable one for people to not sit in the doom and gloom. They're sitting in, let's make something and let's have a conversation and let's like create a space where people are, and it's not a negative. And it provides a space to like talk about solutions and talk about like where do we go from here.
Yeah, it's an amazing way to open up the conversation, isn't it? And like in a really accessible way without getting people's barriers up or without triggering them negatively.
Yeah, like a shame or like a guilt.
Mm.
And then those conversations come up naturally. Yeah, so I love making them with people when I'm sitting in circle, and I've been really lucky to share that with like the Dalyarak Indigenous Centre in Esperance and, yeah, Christmas Island and on Cocos Islands. But then personally, like I sit here in that's where I'm recording from now, is I have a little art studio that I spent the last year building with friends. And I spend hours and hours in here just making something that I absolutely love.
Yeah, so your art studio, when you say making with friends, is it's like a little, like a tiny home almost, isn't it? So it was, it's built on a like a trailer base.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's super groovy looking. I don't know if you can see from the video. It might be a bit blurry, but there's like a beautiful stained glass window at the end of it, and it's got like a split barn door, and it's got driftwood cupboards that was like all the driftwood was collected off of the beach, which, yeah, stores all of my rope in colour coordination, and every part of it has a story to it, and I had a lot of help, and, yeah, it was such an amazing project.
Yeah, it looks incredible. I love tiny homes and transportable spaces. And,
yeah, me too.
Yeah. I think it's so much potential for small spaces that I won't go down that rabbit hole, but, you know, like there is just so much potential and like people don't realize. I think that you just get, there's a really strong cultural narrative in certain parts of the world.
You need more space. You need more of everything.
Yeah. And everyone, it's very easy to get carried along with that narrative. But when you live in small spaces, you just, you realize that there is a completely different way of being.
Yes.
Oh, there was something I was going to say there about, just about storytelling, I guess, and that materials tell stories. So the fact that you're like, you know, you're talking about your beautiful little studio and that each element in there tells a story. And I guess that's what you're doing when we make art. And it's like the story of your artwork is that it's got this history of a life before.
Yeah. And I love that because I don't know the story of it before I find it. Like it was, I don't know where it was made. I don't know where it was drilled out of the earth as in the form of oil before it was turned into a rope, before it was bought, before it was put on a boat, before it was used as fishing gear out at sea before. Like I don't know how it got lost or where it traveled or like the story of it before it came into my hands is unknown. And I guess it could have just sat there until it eventually broke down into tiny pieces, or it could have been taken to the tip and got burnt, but yeah, it's found its way into my hands, and then I fall in love with it and make something out of it, and then the story even continues on after that. So somebody buys it and takes it to their home, and there's conversations that go on around it that I'm not aware of. People are the butterfly effect is something that I love, and the story of it is amazing. Like we don't have an art supply store here. We don't have any kind of store like that at all. We are very much bare minimal. So whatever we find that's our art supplies.
Yeah, how interesting and how cool, I think, just to think of like the storyline there and how it continues after you, and it's, you know, there's an existing one before you. I think that's what you want people to be curious about. That's what you want people to be talking about and thinking about as far as any objects that we own, because then you're interested in the way that its life extends beyond the use you have for it in the immediate moment. And then you care more if you are able to kind of contemplate those stories. But yeah, definitely does. I imagine it would definitely shape your art making practice if you don't have an art store. And, you know, those constraints can actually lead to a lot of creativity in some ways. I'm sure frustration at times.
Absolutely.
But
For example, like I went probably a year without leaving the island at all. And in that time, I ran out of cotton. And I use, out with my baskets, I use 100% stuff I found on the beach, even my thread rope. I collect all of these tiny little strands, and that's what I use to sew. But when I make earrings, I need cotton to be able to tie really well the earring that I've made to the little hook. I need cotton, and I couldn't get it at our little, we have one little shop on the island, and they didn't sell it. And I just had to wait until I was in a place where I could buy cotton. And that, like, you're so appreciative. So when I did go back to the mainland, I bought, like, I don't buy much, but I was so excited to go and buy the exact type of cotton that I wanted. And it's something that I value so much. And yeah, it's like up on my shelf here because it's so, to me, like, it's so special.
Yeah, replenish your stocks would have been an exciting time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely makes you more considered when you don't have access to things and, you know, access on lots of levels. I'm sure there's some listeners that are thinking like, oh, you live on a remote island, sure, but you've got a plane, so I'm sure you can just like online order things, but that's not really how it works. You know, that's not the point. Like,
I mean,
that's
you could. Yeah, you could. Yeah, and I just am aware of how privileged I am and how lucky I am, and I would rather wait to find like a box of old sewing supplies from an op shop rather than go and buy something new because I just don't feel like I need it.
Yeah, I think we art making is really interesting. Creativity is really interesting that way because it is like transforming the materials you have in front of you. And yeah, you can kind of go either way with it. You can stock every single art material that you want in like in your studio, or you can just work with a few ones and get really, you know, there's no prerequisite. I think a lot of people think that they to be creative, they have to have an abundance of materials. And sure, that's inspiring. And sometimes that can be really helpful if you're trying to be playful or you're trying to expand your practice. But actually, like, you need very little to be creative. And sometimes having very little pushes your creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, when I find like rope, it looks like rubbish. That's what it looks like. And it looks like, why would you even touch that, really? Like, sometimes it's so gross, or sometimes it's like so knotted and I'm sitting on a beach for like 2 hours untangling beach like mess of knots. But even that's part of it.
Yeah, that process. Yeah, because when you buy something from the store, it cuts out all of that process, doesn't it? It cuts out all that storyline of like having to work it out and problem solve it and untangle all the knots. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when somebody buys a basket, so we have like an art gallery here, and I see who buys my work a lot of the time, and I can tell them where I found that rope, or I can tell them how long it took me to untangle it, or I can tell them like I did the atoll walk. So I walked it in my backpack across like 16 islands to get it back home before I even started making it. And the stories in all of that is something that I just love.
It's really cool. So yeah, there's like lots of islands then. Like, I know that the Cocos Islands are like a group of islands, but yeah, you're saying like 16 atolls. So atolls are large sections of sandbanks that constitute, I guess, a landmass. Is that right?
Atoll is like a group of islands. Okay. So Cocos is an atoll of islands. We've got 27 islands, and there's two of them on Cocos that people live on, Home and West. Yeah. And it's kind of in a horseshoe shape. And on a low tide, you can walk across most of them. So yeah, that's called like the atoll walk, which is something that I love. So I like either walk from my island, which is West Island, all the way around to Home Island, or the other way around. And yeah, when I do that, I just bring my backpack and fill it with just like treasure or art supplies or rope or rubbish or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, that's an incredible landscape, and I got my definition completely wrong, which is absolutely fine. I'm here to learn. That's amazing to kind of think, you know, you're like living so closely to tides as well is something that probably a lot of people aren't familiar
with.
Yeah,
totally. You don't want to get your tides wrong if you're doing an adult walk and get stuck.
Yeah, I have to picture pitch. Well, you won't have a tent with you. You just have to have a nap for the night and wait for the tide to change. Yeah, so I think one question I did want to ask you is, but it's just something I kind of wanted to go back to. You've already spoken a little bit about is this idea of like weaving and its traditions and its way of connecting as well. So, you know, it looks like it's becoming a reasonably big part of your practice is weaving with other people. And that's something that's been around a long time and has got lost at different places. But I'm excited to hear that it's making a comeback, and it's making a comeback with marine rubbish, not just natural materials.
Yeah, that's right. So it's got kind of like a modern twist to it, but yeah, traditionally across all kinds of cultures, we've been sitting, usually women, have been sitting and weaving together and talking and sharing stories, and just such a like a natural thing. I've never advertised my basket workshops or my rope workshops as a women's space, but I've only ever had two men come ever. Like, it's usually 100% women, and yeah, have been really lucky to. I just yeah love the space that it creates, and just doing something with your hands and that repetitive motion. I know there's been a lot of studies of the benefits of that repetitive motion as like a soothing thing for your brain, and I definitely find that. And yeah, I love it collectively when I'm able to do it with a group or just on my own. Both of them is something really special.
Yeah, that's so you're definitely right. Certain types of art making that are rhythmic, or any sort of activity that's rhythmic, is regulating to like the brainstem. So like, yeah, our stress response and different things can be soothed by engaging with things like knitting and crocheting and weaving, which is like really cool.
It's definitely a repetitive motion, but I don't find it even remotely boring. Like, my brain is totally soothed, and I have all of these cool ideas, and I feel in flow, and yeah, I love it.
And it's something that's, I guess, been with you probably most of your life. Actually, I find fascinating talking to creative people is like how they, what they loved when they were younger. And sometimes there's not a correlation. Sometimes we move very far away from it. But for you were saying that you loved knitting. And I know that weaving is,
I
but.
always did, but it is also that repetitive. A lot of people don't have the patience for it, and I just always have had the patience to sit. Like, I could sit for hours and do it. And it's even funny, like, I grew up, my dad was a butcher, and I used to help him in the butcher shop, and I was really good at sausage linking, like making, I could make sausages really well, and that was always my job because I just found it so similar to knitting that I could like link them up really quick, and dad would always get me on that because I just had this natural ability to do it.
Yeah, like you've got a ingrained, yeah, ability to, that's because I always feel like I contradict myself because I tell people they can approach any type of creativity, but there are things that we're naturally inclined to, like knitting and like
Yeah, like an
rhythmic
innate.
things I am terrible at and I get really stressed by and they just don't work. Yeah, I mean, I can still do it if I'd like to do it, but it's like, yeah, some people are definitely have that disposition. I've got my three questions at the end, which I'll probably get into soon, but I guess one last question would be, yeah, like I guess what's ahead of you? Because you look like you were doing like a logo. It looks like you're really kind of digging deep, found an anchor, I guess, in your practice.
I mean, it's taken me a while to get to this point, really. Like, I guess it started probably 6 or 7 years ago when I really got into working with pollution, and then I found my own practice of making things out of it, and then I started to share it with people, and then now I've got my own like art studio finished, and yeah, it's kind of started to take on a little journey of its own, and I feel like I'm just jumping on with it and just seeing where it goes.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what's ahead for you. And I think it's important to like talk about pace. So I have recently done an episode on like the pace of art making and like the slowness. But I think it's like it's a conversation that can be had much more generally as well. And I sometimes the solutions to the problems we see are slow as well. So I think, yeah, that's something really interesting to consider when people are figuring out how to approach like problem solving, environmental challenges, or even approaching the art making, or whatever journey I guess you want to pursue. There, it is does take time. You said like it's been a lot, like a considerable amount of years of getting to where you are.
Yeah, it's absolutely like it's I didn't foresee this point in my life. Like I just followed what excited me or what I felt like I needed to do. And yeah, it's funny because it's like it's about the baskets, but it's not really about the baskets. It's kind of a byproduct of a conversation that I feel that I really want to share with people. And slowness wise, yeah, I definitely relate because the time that it takes to for each part of the process is so slow. Like
Yeah, that's so true, actually. There's like all of these layers of slowness in life, like, getting from like the point of identifying a passion to then it becoming something that you can work with in your, like you said, like where you're currently at, but also that the slowness of actually just creating a basket, because weaving itself obviously is slow, but for you, it's like there's a whole
That's
process
right.
before that of undoing knots on beaches for 2 hours and
And even getting to the beaches, like you have to, yeah, it's definitely slow paced, but like there's no rush.
No, there is no rush. I'm really excited to see what is ahead of for you. It's probably a good place now before we start to wind up is where's the best place for people to connect with you or find out what you're doing, or is there any sort of resources, or I will link the Sea Shepherd in as well into the show notes so people can read a bit more about them. But what would you like to connect with people to?
Probably the best place would be I have an Instagram page, which is just my name, Jolie.Anna. And otherwise, I have, yeah, an email address that I can send out to people if they want to have a conversation or collaborate in some way.
Yeah, next time you're on the mainland, I think we'll have to tee up a workshop.
Yeah, I would love to. That's every time I go back to the mainland, I have a list of places and turn it into a little road trip. And yeah, it's a great way to connect with people. Like my last one was in Esperance, so they had found a huge ghost net, like it was a 5-ton ghost net, and they wanted to do something with it rather than send it to landfill. So I headed up there and yeah, was able to share the basket making with so many people, and they made an art exhibition out of it, and it was, yeah, pretty special.
Yeah, that's incredible. And like incredible that to think that this is the way that people are being influenced. Like you can have that impact on like something going to landfill or something being transformed. I guess it's like, the same with an overflowing bath. It's like you can mop up the water and pour it down the drain, or you can take it out and water your garden. And we're limited with rubbish because it's toxic. It's not somewhere we want to be. Like we want the tap turned off, but the fact is that it's there. So, like, how can we utilize it?
That's right. Like the tap getting turned off involves us taking responsibility for where our food is coming from, and because that's a huge percent of what I find is food packaging and the systems that we're relying on, and like looking into so many things. Like it's such a huge problem, but and it's so many problems, but it's also so many solutions needs to be involved.
Yeah, and I think that's for me, that's the hope right there, is that there is so much opportunity for people to get involved and to have an impact. And I think if we all have a little impact in some way, then it can grow.
Ripple effects, and people absolutely have so much more power than they are aware of.
So much. And yeah, like you said, even if it's just thinking about your food packaging and trying to reduce that. Well, if you'd like to, I'd love to ask you the last three sort of questions I ask all my guests.
Yeah, that's great.
The first one, whether you have any barriers or I guess difficulties with your creativity and if you have any ways of overcoming it. So some people say time, some people say self-criticism. You could probably say access to materials. Oh, no, actually not really, because you've got abundant rubbish around you, but you could say
I
access to
do
cotton.
have abundant rubbish around me. I'm gonna say no at this stage. Like at this stage, I feel like I have so much creativity, and I'm giving it the time that it deserves. But I mean, that's going to ebb and flow in it. And it might not be that way forever. But at the moment, no, I don't feel like I have any barriers. Yeah, it's also allowing me to share a message that I want to share and connect with really amazing people and places. And yeah, I feel like right now, no.
Yeah, that's really exciting to hear. And I wonder if, like you said, it's something to do with being aligned in your values at the moment and just being in that space where you've got vision for the future, you've got experience in the past, and you're currently where you want and need to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be inspiring for a lot of people to know that it's possible to be in a place where you feel like uninhibited creative energy.
Yeah.
Cool. So, favorite creative memory?
Favorite creative memory? Probably when I was building my tiny art studio. So that was in 2023 or 22. What year are we in now?
Yeah, we're 24.
Yeah. Okay, so it's 2023. And yeah, every Saturday morning I would go over to my grand's house and have a cup of tea with him and wait for him to brush his teeth. And then we'd go and start building and, yeah, building the studio that I spend so much time in. It's probably my best memories because it was at times so frustrating and at times I thought it was never going to get finished and it was so hard. But then also it was so much fun and watching it grow. Yeah, I would say my best creative memories was building this space. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it looks incredible and there's so much joy in it. But until you've built a space, I don't think you quite realize. I mean, which is just as well, because it's like you would never do it, would you, if you realized all of the problems that rear their heads when you're trying to calculate gaps and joins and water leaks and all sorts of things.
Yeah, and just like you down and just buy something for art, you can't just go down and buy a pack of even screws. Like, you have to foresee all of the things that you're going to need, and either we found them at the tip or I did buy a few things new and get them up on the ship, but a lot of it is reclaimed and finding the perfect thing. Like, for example, my windows I found at the tip, and I just remember being so excited because they were absolutely perfect. And then I found out that they were a friend of mine's that she put at the tip.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool that you found. It's so exciting when you find like treasure like that, isn't it? And then even funny because in like smaller populated places, the likelihood that it's come from someone you know is quite high.
I knew that about whose it was at some point, because I knew that they would see it and be like, oh, that was my window.
That's really cool. Okay, what's a current wish or dream you have? And it can be related to what you're doing, or it might be something completely different.
A wish that I have is, I just wish to be able to share this with more people and a broader audience. And also, this aspect of my life I feel really good about, but I wish to be at a stage where I feel better about growing more of my own food. It's quite hard climate to do that on the islands. We have no nutrients in the soil, so gardening is pretty tricky. But yeah, to one day be able to be regenerative, be able to help the planet rather than just tidy up a little bit is my wish, which I will get to at some stage.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Absolutely. I think as long as the dream's there and the motivation's there, which it sounds like it is, it's just a matter of time. You do sound like you have some challenges, though. It's something that people also probably wouldn't think of, living on an island at sea. Of course, there can be variations in soil, but the soil quality would be very different and very sandy.
It's literally sand. I've put a lot of time and love into a garden that has not ever given back.
Oh, yeah, that's such an, I just hadn't, it never had occurred to me, but of course that would be so challenging. Island life is probably a whole podcast episode itself, a whole podcast series probably. You can probably start a podcast, Jolly, on like living on an island. Oh, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks so much for having me. Really feel privileged to be able to share this with people, and thanks for creating a space for that to happen.
Oh, my absolute pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to another podcast. You can find Jolie on her Instagram account, which is at jolie.anna, so jolie.anna, or she very much welcomes people reaching out to either purchase her beautiful woven creations or to look into future collaborations via email at jolie.russell99@gmail.com. I'll pop her email in the show notes if you want to get in touch.
Thank you so much for listening to Art Muse Podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, then please like, share or follow on whichever listening app you use. If you want to keep up to date on social media, the best place to find us is on Instagram at artmuse_podcast.